Coach 16, Set said, rubbing his chin. That's Chapow's. No telling when he'll be back. You probably don't want to wait. I can send you a message when he returns. Maybe, Wax said, but dallied. The door slammed open, and a young woman in trousers and suspenders burst in.
Boss, she said. Late night play getting out on Bonweather. They're going to want rides.
We sent coaches there already.
Not enough, the young woman said. Boss, there are lots of men on the streets. Common men, the type that will make the rich folk nervous. Playgoers will want carriages.
Set nodded.
Wake Joan and Forgeron. Send them and anyone else you can rouse. Anything more?
We could have more wheels out for certain, particularly near the pubs.
Coin shot, Wax guessed, noticing the bag of metal bits, probably pieces of scrap, the young woman carried. You've been using Allomancer runners to scout for busy areas to send drivers.
Is that surprising? Set asked.
It's expensive.
You have to spend money to make money, Constable, Set said. And as you can see, I'm having a very busy night. Perhaps you could leave it to me if I promise to...
Coin shot, Wax said to the girl. You see coach number 16 out there? I assume your boss has you checking in on the drivers, make sure they're doing their jobs.
How?
She began. You don't hire an Allomancer just for traffic reports, Wax said. Coach 16? She glanced at Set, who nodded. So whatever Set was hiding, it probably didn't have to do with this driver. In fact, it probably didn't have anything to do with Bleeder. Just your average, run-of-the-mill law-breaking. At least one Allomancer on staff, Wax thought.
I didn't see 16 on the streets, the young Allomancer said, turning to Wax.
Well, that's because Chapow is at a soothing parlor over on Decan Street. His coach is around the corner.
At a soothing parlor? Set demanded. He's on the clock!
I know, the Allomancer said. I thought you'd want to hear.
Yes, Wax said. And what of the rioter you have on staff? Are they there too?
Nah, the Allomancer said. He's on...
She cut off and grew pale. The entire room fell still. Using emotional Allomancy, Wax said, to drum up customers. Riot passing people, make them feel tired or urgent and more willing to take the coach conveniently parked right across the street. Set looked sick. Yes, that was it. Flagrant use of a rioter to drum up business. A violation of the Allomantic Agreement of 94. There were entire departments in the government that watched for this sort of thing. Fortunately, while it was a dangerous crime, it wasn't one that worried Wax at the moment.
You don't have any proof,
Set said, then thought better of it.
I'll be speaking with my attorney. I'll have you know that my people are off limits for interrogation without a judicial order to...
Take it up with the Constable General, Wax said. I'm sure you'll be hearing from him soon. For now, I need a description of this carriage driver of yours, along with the names of any pets he owns. Marcy walked along a counter topped with a row of rifles, each accompanied by a domed steel helmet, a folded heavy jacket, and a box of ammunition. Rusts, she hadn't realized the constabulary had access to these kinds of weapons.
Well, she said, looking back at Milan, we're ready if a Kolos warlord decides to invade again.
A pair of corporals, both men, were looking over each weapon to confirm it was in good repair. Though she spotted more than one pair of bleary eyes, the place was alive with activity. More and more constables were arriving, called in for extra duty. As they entered through the main doors, they tended to stop, as Marcy had, looking at the row of weapons. Perhaps that was why Aradel had ordered them set out like this. A quick visual reminder of how dangerous things were growing in the city. Marcy rounded the front counter and entered the offices behind. A young woman corporal passed by, handing Marcy a warm cup of dark tea. It smelled strong, cooked down to increase the concentration of caffeine. She tried a sip. Yup. Awful. She drank another sip anyway. She wasn't going to embarrass herself by asking for honey when everyone else was chugging the stuff like it was some kind of contest. Milan trailed after her, looking around the room with interest. The voluptuous Chandra drew glances. And, well, stares. It wasn't often that a gorgeous 6.5-foot-tall woman strode into the constabulary offices clad in trousers and a tight shirt. She seemed to like the attention, judging by the way she smiled at the men they passed.
Of course she likes the attention, Morrissey thought. Otherwise she wouldn't have chosen a body so exquisitely proportioned.
It seemed blatant to Morrissey. After all, technically, Milan wasn't even human.
I didn't expect to find women in uniform here, Milan noted. I'd assumed you to be an oddity.
The constabulary is very egalitarian, Morrissey said. The Ascendant Warrior serves as a model for all women. You won't find as many of us here as in, say, the solicitor's offices, but it's hardly considered an unfeminine profession.
Sure, sure, Milan said,
smiling at a young lieutenant as the two of them made their way to the back rooms where the records office was.
But I've always found humans to be rather sexist. A natural result of your sexual dimorphism, Vendel says.
And Chandra aren't sexist? Morrissey said, blushing.
Well, considering that a male Chandra you're talking to today might decide to be a woman tomorrow, I'd say we have a different perspective on all that.
Morrissey blushed further.
Surely you're exaggerating.
Not really. Wow. You blush easily, don't you? I'd have thought you'd find this natural, considering that your god is basically a hermaphrodite at this point. Both good and evil, ruin and preservation, light and dark, male and female, etc., etc.
They reached the doors to the records office, and Morrissey turned away to hide her blush. She really wished she'd just find a way to get over her embarrassment.
Harmony's not my god. I'm a survivorist.
Oh, yeah, Milan said. Because that makes sense. Worship the guy who died, rather than the one who saved the world.
The survivor transcended death, Morrissey
said, looking back, hand on the door, but not entering.
He survived even being killed, adopting the mantle of the Ascendant during the time between Preservation's death and Vin's ascension.
Rust. Was she arguing theology with a demigod? Milan, however, just cocked her head.
What?
Really?
Yes. Harmony wrote of it himself in the words of founding Milan.
Huh. I really ought to read that thing one of these days.
You haven't?
Morrissey blinked, trying to fathom a world where one of the faceless immortals didn't know doctrine.
I keep meaning to, Milan said, shrugging. Never can find the time.
You're over 600 years old.
That's the thing about having an eternity, kid, Milan said. It gets really easy to procrastinate. Are we going in that room or not?
Morrissey sighed, pushing into a room filled with filing cabinets and tables piled high with ledgers and broadsheets. This was Aradel's doing. He liked to keep his thumb on what people were saying and writing in the city. So far, he didn't do much with the collection besides watch for reports of crimes his men had missed, but Morrissey had plans. Unfortunately, Constable Micklin, who ran the records office, was one of Reddy's closest friends. As Morrissey entered, Micklin and the other two people working there looked up, then immediately turned back to their files.
"Who's the civilian?"
Micklin asked from his desk in the corner. How did he get his hair to stand up straight like that? Almost like a patch of grass growing from a pot.
Special investigator from another jurisdiction, Morrissey said. Lord Ladrian sent her.
Micklin sniffed.
I'm led to believe this wisp hunt is your doing. I barely got to the offices tonight before I was sent back here to dig up information on that dam breaking.
What did you find?
Morrissey said eagerly, slipping between two large filing cabinets. He had them arranged like sentries, and stepping up to his desk.
Nothing, Micklin said. Dead end. Waste of my time.
I'd like to see what you found anyway, Morrissey said. If it's not too much trouble.
Micklin rested his hands on the table. He spoke softly.
Why are you here, Combs?
I thought Aradel told you,
Morrissey said.
The dam breakage might...
Not that. Here. In the constabulary.
You had an offer to join the Octant's senior prosecutor on a permanent basis with a letter of commendation on your internship with him. I looked into it. And now, what? You suddenly want to chase criminals? Strap on some six guns like you're from the Rusting Roughs? That's not what police work is like.
I'm well aware, Marcy said dryly. But thank you for the information. What did you find?
He sighed, then tapped a folder with the back of his hand.
Rusting waste of my time, he muttered.
Marcy took the folder and retreated between the filing cabinets. She wished it were only Micklin she had to deal with, but the two other constables made their opinions known with quiet sniffs of disdain. Marcy felt them glaring at her as she led Milan out of the room, clutching her folder.
Why do they treat you like that?
Milan asked as they slipped out.
It's complicated.
People tend to be. Why do you let them treat you like that?
I'm working on it.
You want me to do something?
Milan said.
I could scare the cynicism right out of those people. Show them you've got friends that...
No, Marcy said. No, please. It's nothing I haven't dealt with before.
Milan followed her as she scurried to her desk outside of Aradel's office. A lanky female constable stood there, one foot on Marcy's chair, chatting with the man one desk over and sipping her tea. Marcy cleared her throat twice before the woman, Tawdra was her name, wasn't it? Finally looked at her, rolled her eyes, and moved out of the way. Marcy settled down. Milan pulled over a chair.
You sure you don't want me?
No,
Marcy said immediately, digging into the folder. She took a deep breath.
No, please.
I'm sure your friend Waxillium could come on over, fire off a few slugs, force them to stop being such sour lips.
Oh, survivor, no,
Marcy thought, the image of it making her sick. But Milan obviously wasn't going to let this go without an explanation.
I'm beginning to realize that Waxillium is part of the reason why they treat me as they do,
Marcy said, opening the folder Milken had prepared.
Life in the precinct follows a hierarchy. The sergeants start as corporals, work the streets, put in 10 or 15 years doing a hard beat, and finally earn a promotion. The captains start out as lieutenants, and mostly come from noble stock. Once in a while, a sergeant works his or her way up. But everyone's expected to put in their time at the bottom.
And you...
I skipped all that, Marcy said. I applied for, and got, an important position as Aradel's chief aide. Waxillium makes that worse as I'm associated with him. He's like a whirlwind, blowing through and messing everything up. But he's also good at what he does and a high-ranking nobleman, so nobody complains too loudly. I, however...
Not noble.
Not noble enough, Marcy said. My father is low-ranked and I'm illegitimate. That makes me the available target when Waxillium is off-limits.
Milan leaned back in her chair and scanned the room.
Spook was always droning on about things like this. That bloodline shouldn't matter as much as capability. You doing what you did should be impressive to everyone, not threatening. Hell, you said the place was egalitarian.
It is, Marcy said. That's why I could get the job in the first place. But it doesn't stop people from resenting me. I'm the way the world is changing, Milan. And change is frightening.
Huh,
the Congress said.
And the lower ranks just go along with this? You think they'd like you showing that someone can jump in line?
You don't know a lot about human nature, do you?
Of course I do. I've studied and imitated dozens of people.
I suspect you understand individuals, then, Marcy said. The interesting thing about people is that, while they might seem unique... They actually play into broad patterns. Historically, the working class has often been more resistant to change than the class oppressing them.
Really?
Milan asked. Marcy nodded. She started to reach for some books on the small shelf beside her desk, but stopped. This wasn't the time. In fact, they might be witnessing one of the exceptions to this rule, outside on the streets. And, like many upendings of the status quo, when it did happen, it could be violent. Like a steam engine's boiler that had been plugged up, given no release until suddenly... everything exploded. Nobody liked to realize they'd been had. People in Ellendale believed they were living the good life, They'd been told all their lives that Harmony had blessed them with a rich and lavish land of bounty. You could listen to that sort of talk only so long before starting to wonder why all the incredible orchards were owned by someone else, while you had to work long hours just to feed your children. Marcy dug into the contents of the folder, which listed the events surrounding the flooding to the east. Milan settled back in her seat. What a curious creature she was, sitting with head held high, meeting the glances of people who passed without the least concern about what anyone thought of her. Micklin was annoying, but he hadn't let his displeasure undermine his work, which was meticulous and thorough. He'd included constable reports on the dam breakage, a piece written by the engineer who had investigated the problem, and broadsheet clippings from Ellendale regarding the disaster. Most importantly, there was a transcript of the recent trial and execution of the farmer who had caused the flood. He claimed he'd wanted to ruin his neighbor's harvest in an accident, but the saboteur had packed too much dynamite and had blown a hole in the dam large enough to cause the entire thing to fail. Dozens dead and crops destroyed throughout the region, causing grain shortages. The defense had called witnesses who claimed that the saboteur, a man named Johnst, had been acting erratically. They claimed he was obviously mad, and the more she read, the more Marcy was convinced he was mad, if only because Bleeder was. "Look at this," Marcy said, handing a sheet to Milan. The condor took it and read, then grunted.
"He couldn't remember the names of his children at the trial."
"Seems like good evidence that Johnst had been replaced, wouldn't you say?"
"Yes and no," Milan said. "The old guard, they are really good at interrogating people and doing research before taking a new form. We don't have to do that so much anymore. Most of the forms we take are persons we've made up ourselves. If this was Bleeder, she must have been pressed for time."
Milan pointed at a section farther down the page.
"This is much better proof, if you ask me."
Marcy scooted over, looking at the paragraphs indicated. "Report of the execution. Prisoner was hanged until dead. Rejected a final meal and demanded it be over with quickly. Grave desecrated 2 nights later. Suspected to be the work of those who lost family in the flood."
"Wow," Marcy said, taking the paper back. She hadn't reached that section yet. "Yeah. Escaping the grave, eh? She actually let them bury her?"
"Undoubtedly," Milan said. "Ba'am is nothing if not dedicated to her craft."
"Then why forget the names of the children?"
Milan shook her head.
"No idea."
Either way, this seemed to be enough to take to Aradel.
"Come on,"
she said. 15. One thing that Wax's life in the roughs had taught him was that men would monetize anything. The first time he'd seen someone selling water, he'd been surprised. Who sold something that literally fell from the sky? Now, more than 20 years later, he was surprised nobody in Ellendale had found a way to charge a tax on collecting rainwater. If someone wanted it, you could charge for it. That went double for Allomancy, though there were some conservatives who decried the increasing commercialization of the metallic arts. Ferrochemists for hire were much scarcer than allomancers, perhaps because terrorist traditions viewed their powers with such reverence. Wax walked up the steps toward the building, which stood alone on the street in a fairly nice neighborhood of town, even if this was the darker end of the lane, so to speak. The place was 2 stories tall and had the window shades drawn, though light inside gave them a warm glow. A black coach, with a silver crest scraped across its face, was parked in the drive to the right. The soothing washed over him right as he reached the door. A calm, gentle feeling, like emotional anesthetic. Like someone had pressed a pillow against his emotions in an attempt to lovingly smother them. "Sloppy," he thought. "Should have brought my hat." It had an aluminum lining, and Bleeder could have access to a spike letting her soothe or riot. Well, he'd have to fetch it later. He pushed into the building, entering a room dimly lit with lamps in red shades. A scattering of men and women lounged on cushions inside, smoking cigars or incense pipes, staring at the ceiling, which was painted like a stained glass window in a pretty abstract pattern. Most businesses would be closed by this hour, but not the soothing parlors. Visiting one was more expensive than a night at the pub, but had none of the side effects. Or to be more precise, it had different side effects. A woman in a matronly gown, and a hat, likely aluminum-lined, approached Wax, probably to take payment, but Wax flashed his credentials.
"If you think credentials will get you in free," the proprietor said, "then you must be new to the force."
Wax gave her a dry smile, tucking away the metal plate. She ran a low-grade soothing parlor. While what she did wasn't illegal, amusingly it was fine to manipulate people's emotions so long as they were paying for it, she'd be used to the constables checking up on her. Not only did these sorts of places tend to attract people who were hiding from something, it was very possible for a disreputable soothing parlor to take advantage of its clients. None of the people here matched Chappelle's description, but soothing parlors often had more than one room. "Short man," Wax said, "balding, known as Chappelle, but may not have given that name." The proprietor nodded and gestured for Wax to follow as she crossed the room, weaving between the people lounging on the floor. The dim, smoky building should have left Wax jumpy. This was just the sort of place where accidents or ambushes happened, but the soothing was difficult to pierce. It tore away the top layers of his concern, exposing those beneath, his worry for Wayne and Marcy. Beneath that, a surprising frustration, even anger, at God. Then those emotions, too, became as fluttering wings, leaving him hollow. Not calm, just empty. He wanted to settle into one of the chairs, close his eyes, and let out a sigh of relaxation. Bleeder would wait. Surely she wouldn't try to kill again tonight. Why worry if she did? He probably couldn't stop her anyway. He found he hated that sensation. These emotions were his. They were a core of his self. Taking them away didn't make him happy or help him forget. It just made him feel sick. He picked up his pace, trying to urge the proprietor faster as they left the room with the cushions and stepped into a long hallway. Here they passed several other rooms. A completely white chamber with people sitting cross-legged on the floor. Another that was completely black, no lights at all, the people inside barely visible. There was even a room with painted trees on the walls, the ground covered in thatch like a terrace meeting hut. A lone man sat in this one, on a solitary chair, eyes closed. The proprietor led Wax up a set of steps. Perhaps the man in the terrace room had been one of the soothers. The parlor would have at least one in here somewhere, extending out a small bubble of soothing. Parlors were supposed to have aluminum sheets in the walls to keep the emotional allomancy contained from the neighborhood, but the rule wasn't uniformly enforced. The proprietor led Wax to a small room on the second floor, unadorned, save for a couch at the center for massages. Chappelle didn't lie on that. Instead, he paced by a latched window in the far wall, frustrating the masseuse who stood nearby with her arms folded. An old man sat in a chair by the wall, the metal vials in his pocket, visible to Wax as small, diffuse lines pointing at the suspended flakes, marked him as an allomancer. Wax raised his eyebrow. Chappelle had paid for a private session. Where had he found that kind of money? The coach driver stopped in place, looking toward Wax. His eyes flicked toward the guns at Wax's hips. Then he fell to his knees, weeping. The aged soother rose with audible cracks from his joints.
"I've done what I can, Mistress Hallex," he said to the proprietor. "But this man doesn't need allomancy. He needs a physician."
"He's yours," Mistress Hallex said to Wax. "Get him out of here. He's disturbing my people."
Wax crossed the room to kneel beside Chappelle. The short man shivered, holding his legs.
"Chappelle," Wax said, "look at me." Chappelle turned toward him. "What's the name of your dog?" Wax asked.
I don't have a dog. He died a few years back."
Good enough. This wasn't Bleeder in disguise, unless she'd thought to interrogate a random cab driver about his pets before killing him and taking his shape.
"What's wrong?" Wax said. "Why are you here?"
"To forget what I saw."
"Soothing doesn't work like that," Wax said. "It doesn't take your memories.
but it should make me feel better, right?
Depends on the emotions you're feeling, Wax said, and the skill of the soother. He held the man by the shoulder. What did you see, Chapao? The man blinked reddened eyes.
I saw myself.
Aradel wasn't in his office, of course. That place was there, as he put it,
for giving house lords somewhere to sit when they come to complain at me.
Marcy found him on the roof of the constabulary offices, listening to reports from the two precinct coinshots who had been scouting the city. Marcy politely waited, with Milan and several constable lieutenants standing nearby, and was able to hear most of the latest report. Thousands still on the streets, my lord. They're congregating at pubs, not going home. Aradel stood with one booted foot up on the short wall around the rooftop as he took the reports. Mist curled around each coin shot in a distinct vortex. It responded to Alamancy. Finally, Aradel dismissed the two. They weren't true constables, mere contractors. Their loyalties would be to their houses, or in some cases, to their pocketbooks. As they left, jumping off the roof, the constable general turned to the waiting lieutenants.
Get the men ready to clear out the pubs, he said softly.
Sir?
One of the women asked.
We're going to close them down, Aradel said, pointing. First on the promenades, then work down the smaller streets. We can't start until I get authority from the governor to institute martial law in the Octant, but I want the constables ready to move as soon as we have word.
The lieutenants ran to obey. Aradel glanced toward Marcy, and she thought she saw something of his ancestor in him, a soldier who had died a martyr during the days of the Ascendant Warrior. In another era, would this man have been a field general rather than a policeman?
What do you have for me, Lieutenant Combs? He said,
waving her forward. Milan lingered by the stairwell down, hands in her trouser pockets.
Our assassin, sir,
Marcy said, proffering the folder. She dug her way out of her own grave after being executed for causing the floods in the east. They found the bones nearby a few days later and called it desecration of the grave. After all, why would they guess that one of the holy faceless immortals had been inhabiting the body of a murderer and criminal? Aradel breathed out quietly in a hiss. Shadows moved beneath the streetlights, despite the hour, on the promenade behind him.
So this is all her doing?
Pardon, sir, Marcy said, but I'd say this is rather the fault of the city's unpleasant working conditions. That said, Bleeder is most certainly shoving it along. She wanted the city to be on the brink of cracking when she made her move.
Ruin, Aradel whispered. In the face of that, it seems almost trivial whether the governor is corrupt or not, doesn't it?
I suppose that depends on whom you ask.
Shots rose from the street down below, a group of men passing along the canal, speaking riotously to one another. She couldn't make out their words, just their tone.
I still want proof, Aradel said. Not to diminish your efforts, Lieutenant. But I'm not going to jump at wraiths in the mist unless I can see for myself. That goes for the governor, too. Keep your eyes open. If you can find me something concrete, we'll use it once this all blows over. And I still want some kind of proof regarding your supernatural assassin.
I understand, sir,
Marcy said, nodding toward Milan, lit by the lanterns hanging on poles near the door to the stairs.
And I have some proof for you there. But it would be best if we could do this in private.
Aradel slowly shifted his weight backward, lowering his foot from the top of the parapet he'd been leaning on. He glanced at Marcy, who nodded.
Below,
he said to the two remaining constables attending him. Junior corporals for message running. They obeyed, and once they were gone, Aradel crossed the distance to Milan.
I hope, he said after clearing his throat, that my questions aren't offensive, your grace.
Sincere inquiries never offend, human, Milan said, for it is thy duty to seek truth. True questions return only truth.
Her skin shimmered, growing transparent as it had before, but somehow also giving off a kaleidoscopic sheen. She spread her hands to the sides, and her blouse somehow split and slid down her shoulders, exposing a transparent torso with an emerald skeleton that glittered in the lamplight.